Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, Hour 2, a happier happy hour, and a fine guest right from the top. He is former U.S. Attorney, our good friend James Santel, host of the Morning Cannoli Saturday mornings right here on the Civic Media. Jim, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Gentlemen, good to be with you as always this afternoon.
Thank you, Jim. I don't know if you were in court today or perhaps had some time to watch the contentious Merrick Garland hearing. My understanding, the Attorney General of the United States went to the Hill and got grilled by Republicans. This was quite a show hearing because, of course, Jim, they know he can't disclose the details that they're asking him to disclose. Tell us all about the underlying evidence of the Hunter Biden case. Well, of course, you can't discuss open investigations of the sort. He seemed exasperated at times. Jim, did you catch any of the testimony?
I did, and certainly heard some of the repeat of his testimony there. I think it's fair to say, obviously, Merrick Garland, as we have talked before, a fairly reserved guy, been a federal judge for most of his career, not used to flying off the handle, and he didn't do that today. I think he was still measured. But I thought there was an increased sense of urgency about his message, an increased sense of some frustration there that he continues to be confronted with these questions that are problematic in so many ways. And Mike, you've just identified one of them. Obviously, we have rules in this country. One of them is Rule 6C about grand jury secrecy. We do not disclose the pendency of investigations, but don't disclose the substance of it, who's testifying, those kinds of things. That's the law. And for what it's worth, he would have been engaging in a violation of the law, arguably the criminal law, had he responded to some of those questions. Beyond that, I thought it was very significant that he was pushing back repeatedly on this notion. Love the quote that he is not the counsel for the president, something that Donald Trump during his term consistently bemoaned that he didn't have his own attorney as the attorney general, nor did he say, am I the prosecutor for the Congress? I'm neither one of those. I am an advocate for the people of the United States of America. That's exactly what you want an attorney general to be saying and doing. He can't talk beyond that because, again, these are matters for investigation. Once the indictments in these cases, known and unknown, are released, then you can talk more about that. But even there, how does the Department of Justice speak? We speak in our pleadings. We speak in things said on the record in court. We do not talk behind closed doors and even in front of open doors. We don't go on town meetings and talk about things that are out there. That's just not the way the Department of Justice works. It shouldn't work in any other way than that. I thought Merrick Garland, again, a bit more animated today, pushing back on this truly crazy notion that somehow the department has been politicized. He is trying very, very hard to do just the opposite. You know, on this show, I've been somewhat critical of him for going overboard, this notion that everybody, we need to get a special counsel now in all these cases. That's his attempt to try to send to the country this message that no one there is politicizing these investigations. I think at some point we have to ratchet even that back and say, you know what, the Department of Justice can do that. You've got career people, prosecutors, civil litigants. He talked about them today. They can do this kind of work, and they shouldn't deserve this kind of very minute picking through what's out there. Also commented about some of the activities of members of Congress, identifying specific special agents, specific AUSAs who are out there, completely inappropriate. U.S. attorneys, other people in political appointments, those folks, yes, you can criticize them, but the line people, the civil servants, I was one for 25 years, that's off base. And to the extent the Republicans, anybody else is going after them, that's not only contrary to our tradition, but actually undermining the process that is out there that assumes, again, an apartisan, non-political approach to all of this.
Devil's Advocates, our fine guest, Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours. Jim, the forever jacketless Jim Jordan is the committee chairman, and man could stand a trip down to the men's warehouse. I'm just saying. But he's always there without the jacket.
He's more dressed up than the Senate these days, man, but that's a different story.
We're not talking about Fetterman. Let me ask you, and if you'll indulge me, Jim, I want to read a quote from the Attorney General. He was being pressed by Jim Jordan, and the topic was Hunter Biden. And here's what he said. I promised the Senate that I would not intrude in his investigation. I do not intend to discuss internal Justice Department deliberations, whether or not I had them. I have intentionally not involved myself in the facts of the case, not because I'm trying to get out of responsibility, but because I am trying to pursue my responsibility. Now, all these answers, of course, insufficient for Jim Jordan and the Republicans on this committee, Matt Gaetz and the rest, but that's an understandable point of view for the Attorney General. I mean, if he personally involved himself in this investigation, well, you must wonder if he's conflicted, if he's acting at the behest of his president, because we saw the example the last time around, did we not, Jim?
Absolutely. We saw this repeatedly. Mike Flynn, other things, other people, much too associated with the White House. And you've got an Attorney General named Bill Barr, who, again, trying very hard these days to resurrect his reputation unsuccessfully after having done just that. Exactly right. In this situation, again, the Department of Justice, in this wildly unprecedented time of prosecuting a former president and present candidate while also prosecuting the son of the other candidate in this in this election. So, again, we use the word unprecedented too much. Here it is, accurately used. But as to the Attorney General's remarks, precisely, and what he has done, notwithstanding my own criticism of going special counsel happy in this country, what he has done is he's appointed David Weiss, again, the holdover U.S. attorney from Delaware under the Trump administration to oversee this, given him this arm's length freedom to do what he needs to do, has gone back after the whole plea deal blew up in front of the judge back in Delaware a couple months ago, and is now going ahead with this indictment, obviously before a grand jury. Could still be charged with tax violations as well. All of that, the Attorney General, does he know about it? Sure he does. Is he getting reports on it? Of course he is, but not making the day-to-day determinations because, again, you don't want the Jim Jordans and the Matt Gaetzes and other people out there to say, well, you're doing this because, or to defend the president's son, you're doing all this because you want somebody else to be in the ground-level decision-making process. And you're not a part of that directly. And so again, appropriately, whether someone's a special counsel or not, to have that being handled by someone who has that expertise, plainly the U.S. attorney there does, and can do this in a way, and we're not talking about shielding the Attorney General. We're talking, Mike, exactly as you said, and exactly as the quote from the Attorney General indicates, you want to provide insurance to the people of America that there's nothing unusual going on here, nothing funny, nothing untoward. We've got an independent prosecutor here who's making these judgment calls. Somebody who is a part of the cabinet is not doing them on a daily basis. That's what we want from an attorney general. That's the arm's length approach to the White House we've talked about so many times.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. That is James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Morning Cannolis here on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11 on Saturdays. Jim, great to see you. Seems like it's been a while, man. Let's get up to speed on the current issues.
Let's go.
Let's go to the classified documents case in Florida. Molly Michael, my understanding, a longtime personal assistant to Donald Trump, quit, I guess, shortly after the fiasco with the boxes. Apparently, she told the FBI that Trump tried to do the Obi-Wan Kenobi. These aren't the droids you're looking for. He said, you don't know anything about the boxes. You don't know anything about the boxes. That's how Trump works. What's your sense of this news, the personal assistant, and how do you think this is going to affect the timing in the classified documents case?
Sure. It's, again, another thing that happens from time to time. Once you're indicting a case and people suddenly realize, oh, my gosh, I've got some information about the very thing that's set forth in that speaking indictment, as we've talked about, you do get people like this who come forward and say, wait, I remember a conversation where these very things were talked about. She plainly is also getting the message, either directly or through her attorney, that you don't want to be on the side of Donald Trump. You don't want to be out there being a witness for him. You want to tell the truth, and she's going down that road. Presumably, she's had that contact with Jack Smith and the folks responsible for the Mar-a-Lago investigation. And most importantly for Donald Trump, once again, not good news, plainly. And she could be one of the people be on a witness list. We don't know if she's testified already before the grand jury. Could have, maybe so. Maybe she's more recent. But she plainly is the kind of person who can further add what intent to the prosecution when it comes to that trial. Why? Because the things that she says about this conversation with Donald Trump, where he obviously talks about the boxes and does the Obi-Wan Kenobi approach, as you indicated, those things reflect what's going on in Donald Trump's mind at the time. And they establish for the jury his knowledge of the impropriety of his having those documents, his purposefulness in continuing to maintain them. It's just more evidence of what Jack Smith is compiling day after day after day for playing in his opening statement, for playing during the course of the trials. All of this, again, not good for Donald Trump prosecution in this and the other cases as well. Presumably, she's right now on the right side of justice, if you will, which is finding out what happened, letting a jury decide, and having them determine whether or not there's proof beyond a reasonable doubt the president committed these crimes. It's quite compelling.
Different prosecution, the Georgia prosecution's Fulton County. My understanding, the trial of two of the defendants, Kenneth Chesebrough and Sidney Powell, will go forward. And my understanding is also that Lynn Wood, conservative lawyer, is now claiming he is testifying against Sidney Powell, but he denies that he's turned state's evidence against Trump. Like, it's all her fault? Jim, does that seem a plausible defense for either he or the former?
Right. It gets more curiouser and curiouser all the time, right? And obviously, Lynn Wood, one of these folks who involved in some of these activities, not the subject, unindicted or indicted up to this point, but the kind of guy who probably wants to play a little bit both sides, wants to come forward, not perjure himself, wants to provide testimony, but denying that he's cooperating affirmatively. You can do that. But at some point, you also have to make a decision about what the substance of what you're saying is true and accurate. This case is not in any way unraveling. It's becoming more complex by the virtue of the fact we've got these independent trials now going on, some of this bifurcation of defendants too. And this is just one more example of that. The Lynn Wood testimony adds more color to what Jack Smith can present in court.
Jim, we're short on time. Are we going to see a trial next month in Georgia for these two defendants?
I, again, the judge seems fairly clear that we're going to do this. I scratch my head about that a lot, but apparently it can happen. And if the judge says we're going to trial, we'll select a jury on that morning.
I'm going to put you down for probably. Come back.
The big and tall of political talk, the devil's advocates.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Our guest, James Santel, sticking around for one more segment. Jim, appreciate you doing so. Before we move on to some of the other travails and trials of Donald Trump, the classified documents case is a personal assistant who has now apparently returned some documents over to Jack Smith. And my understanding, based on the reporting, Jim, is that Donald Trump would put like to-do lists and you write them on these classified documents and give them to her. So a couple of questions I have. Is that in and of itself a problem, writing on these classified documents? And then, of course, she apparently turned them over. So these are more documents that were not initially turned over by Trump and his team. Your thoughts, counselor?
Yes, yes, and yes. Again, it gets even more complicated, right? You shouldn't be writing on classified documents. Again, it doesn't necessarily destroy the integrity of them, but it goes more largely to this issue about handling them generally. When I was in Iraq, where we had a lot of that, when I was U.S. attorney from time to time, we had classified documents. You read them. The whole idea is you read them. You put them in your head, if you will. You don't disclose them. And even if you make more records of them, more notes, whether it's on the documents, other things, now you've created another document that can also be subject to classification because you're using the information from the classified document. So it's not good. And it just underscores, again, the craziness with which our former president was handling all these documents. Secondarily, again, she turns these over now to Jack Smith and says, this is what I know about them. These are the annotations he made. And depending upon how those exactly look and what additional background that she can provide about them, again, indicates that you've got not only more evidence there, But you do wonder aloud what else is out there, which I think is the principal focus of your question, right, Dom? If she is still producing these things, we know that in order to go in and get a search warrant, you have to have probable cause to believe there's a crime being committed in that location. We've talked a lot about Bedminster as opposed to just Mar-a-Lago. What about the Trump Tower? Well, presumably there would have been a search warrant if you had probable cause. But this underscores once again that you got to have somebody coming forward and saying, yes, this is where they are. I got them. And it may well indicate that Donald Trump has still got items out there. And that is hugely troubling in addition to the substance of this assistant's testimony.
All right, Jim, the civil trial, Letitia James, New York State Attorney General, State Appeals Court apparently put something on, put it on pause. Or, you know, these are the kind of delays and things that we know were going to come up. What's going on there right now, Jim, to your understanding?
Sure. So the judge is presiding over this case. His name is Judge Engoron, has said, I think his expression was over hell or high water. We are not delaying this trial. He set it for October 2nd, which is also the first day of the Supreme Court getting together. So an important day in our history coming up soon. He is committed to it. It remains on his calendar. What happened, of course, is that Donald Trump and his attorneys came forward with this continuing motion and said, you know what, because of the age of some of this, again, most of this happens before he's the president, because of some what we'd call statute of limitations issues, even under New York law, that their position is that these are not prosecutable offenses, or at least some of them aren't. And so what's happened is an appeals court judge looked at this and said, okay, we'll take a look at this, determine whether or not there's some there and get back to you, and established a quick briefing schedule on this. It's not entirely clear that the October 2nd date there will go away. And that one's been established by, again, the trial court judge for a long period of time. I think he's going to try to impanel a jury on that morning. But again, the appeals court moving quickly on this because I think they know they need to get an answer here. The appeals court plainly comes back and says, you know what, these charges are too late, they're too old. Then summer, all this goes away. I think that would be a stunning result. Unlikely that Letitia James would file something that would be untimely. But we need to go through this process. So down the road, again, we've got this sense that Donald Trump has been given all the options he's been given to ensure that his defense is adequate and aggressive, which it should
Luckily,
be.
Jim, the court indicated they'll make a decision next week of September 25th. If it goes against Trump, could he then appeal that?
He could. He could go again to the higher level code. The New York Supreme Court could do that, whether or not they take the case. I mean, at some point, too, this has got to be finalized as well. And at some point, judges can also say, you know, we are not ruling in favor of you, Mr. Former President. Nor are we staying the trial pending things that you do. The question whether a court stays its own decision while other things go on, that's always an important issue. If, in fact, the judge, the appeals court, the panel says there's no there, the case can go ahead, unlikely that they would further stay this again because it's been on the court's trial calendar for a while, and Judge Engoron wants to go ahead with this, and as does Letitia James.
Jim Santel, just a few more minutes with us. A couple of questions left for you, though, sir. Looking closer to home, Megan Wolf, the Wisconsin Elections Commission administrator, was voted to have been stripped from her position, but she's still showing up for work. In my understanding, there is a lawsuit. There's also the threat of impeachment against Janet Protasiewicz. Any opinions on either of these cases that'll probably end up in the courts, I suspect, Jim.
Right. All of them, again, how sad it is here in the state of Wisconsin, as we are in the United States of America, that we're doing all of this strategy stuff that is not intended to get to the big issues of our time, education, healthcare, immigration, all the other things that are important, violence, guns, those kinds of things. But instead, we're talking about impeaching a Supreme Court justice who was sworn in on October 1st. High crimes and misdemeanors. She hasn't yet decided a case. Is this a situation where an impeachment articles should be returned by the assembly? Can they do it? Yes. Should they do it? No. Not a premise for doing that at all. We'll see what they do if they unwisely go down this road. Again, this may be a second abortion issue for the Republicans in the state of Wisconsin. Didn't go well for them the first time around. At some point, people get tired of that kind of behavior and that kind of machinations that are not intended to move forward. Second, you've got Megan Wolf, as you said, lots of issues there about being able to stay on. There wasn't an official renomination of her. And so it's now back in the courts. Meanwhile, she's at work ensuring that the Wisconsin Election Commission can make decisions. We got to get that one resolved too, because what, you know, what's happening in 2024? That's right. There are at least three elections going on. We got to be addressing those as well.
Jim Santel, our fine guest, former U.S. attorney. He is the host of the Morning Cannolis right here on the Civic Media Network. Tune in for Jim 9 to 11 on Saturday mornings. Any final thoughts, counselor? I'll give you like 30.
It's always good to be with you. A time of when we're all, as we often do in these afternoon discussions, a time of civics understanding for America, right? It's a crash course in law school, which we enjoy conveying to your listeners, but also a time when to understand what's going on, you really do have to spend some time digging into it. That's exactly what you do. Congratulations on that mission. It's a good
Thank
one.
Thank you for your help, Jim.
Jim, I'm just here for the cannolis. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. They happen.
The Devil's Advocates may not agree on much, but funny is funny.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Wednesday Happier Happy Hour. Always happy when Jim Santel comes round. Thank you, sir. The fine counselor does a fine radio show Saturday mornings right here on the Civic Media, 9 to 11 a.m., the Morning Cannolis. And he's good company. So we like Jim. Thanks for coming around,
sir. Yeah,
Jim's
a good cat. Tune in. You'll learn a lot.
You can be like Jim and join the greatest radio show ever just by dialing 844-967-2789. Dom, Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States, and Nate's been working hard during the break, actually pulling up some fresh sound so we can share it with you, our audience. But I'd point out, one Republican, one lone Republican, actually came away very supportive of the Attorney General today. Ken Buck, you followed the facts. Far-right lawmaker breaks with party and sides with Garland. He must be retiring, Dom.
Right. He's stepping down soon.
Rep Ken Buck, Republican from Colorado, a member of the Hardline Freedom Caucus, stood up against the GOP attacks on Merrick Garland in a hearing on Wednesday. There's the truth, Dom. Buck is, you know, considering a job in media, apparently.
Yeah. That's why all grow a spine when they're getting ready to walk out the door.
Buck, who has reportedly been pondering leaving Congress for a job at the CNN, has recently made waves among fellow Republicans for bucking them when it comes to an impeachment inquiry into the president. Now, while fellow Republicans were lashing out at Garland, Buck chose a different route. He praised Garland's past and his independence. During the hearing, Buck noted that Garland led the prosecution of the Oklahoma City bombing case, you know, the Timothy McVeigh, and he had imposed the death penalty there. The lawmaker also said that he was not exactly a Democrat priority. You did so because of the rule of law. You did so because of the facts and the law, and did so. And you followed the facts and the law in that situation. Well, that's kind of like high praise from a Republican acknowledging the successful prosecution of that was the Oklahoma City bomber. That's not the Unabomber. But to acknowledge anything good any Democrat ever did ever, or the Attorney General, I'm not even sure that Merrick Garland is a Democrat. Appointed
well,
by
he's trying to, what if he's fluffing up the resume for the CNN job, man. You know, he don't want to be a total hack on CNN. He's still somewhat of a hack.
So they only play hackery for political gain, but when the truth comes out, then, you know, then they got to soften it up so they can go get a job in the real world.
Well, Michael, you put your finger right on it. And they'd have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for those meddling kids.
844-967-2789. Let's go to the rundown. Nate, working hard. We've got the Attorney General of the United States. He starts with a question. Defunding the FBI? Are you crazy, man?
It's mega's all about defunding the police. Wow. Wow, that BLM stuff certainly must have rubbed off on him.
Play cut one.
I cannot imagine the consequences of defunding the FBI, but they would be catastrophic.
Let's just say it'd be catastrophic. And I don't think that's being hyperbolic. A little more from the Attorney General. Cut two, Nate.
This country took her in.
his grandmother.
And under the protection of our laws, she was able to live without fear of persecution. That protection is what distinguishes this country from so many others.
And Garland feels like he's repaying a debt. Cut three.
The protection of law, the rule of law, is the foundation of our system of government. Repaying this country for the debt my family owes, for our very lives, has been the focus of my entire professional career.
More from the Attorney General. Seems downright emotional there, giving his testimony before a House committee earlier today. They were there to grill his ass. Equal laws applied. Cut number four, please. Merrick Garland.
We apply the same laws to everyone. There is not one set of laws for the powerful and another for the powerless, one for the rich and another for the poor, one for Democrats and another for Republicans, or different rules depending upon one's race or ethnicity or religion.
You know, I don't think it's so partisan as favoring of the rich. You got good legal counsel.
Your
lawyer costs $500 hour.
Yeah.
You're probably going to at least have the chance to plead it down, just as Hunter.
Yeah, but also as Giuliani. You know what I mean? Maybe, maybe not.
Garland says he will not back down. Let's play the Attorney General. Cut five, please.
We will not be intimidated. We will do our jobs free from outside influence, and we will not back down from defending our democracy.
And the public servant. The public servants, Jim Santel, talked about the Republicans, the House members, were attacking the bureaucrats, naming names, effectively, what, voxing them, trying to put them out there for scorn, ridicule, or violence? That's kind of the game they play so often, Dom. Here is what the Attorney General thought about the practice of Republicans singling out public servants. Cut six, please.
All of us recognize that with this work comes public scrutiny, criticism, and legitimate oversight. These are appropriate and important given the matters and the gravity of the matters that are before the department. But singling out individual career public servants who are just doing their jobs is dangerous.
Do you think he's talking to Wisconsin Republicans in their pursuit of Megan Wolf?
There's so many examples that could relate to. Man, it's hard to say.
Couple more from the Attorney General of the United States. He, of course, a Joe Biden appointee, and he claims they're following the facts. Cut seven, please.
I am not the president's lawyer. I will add, I am not Congress's prosecutor. The Justice Department works for the American people. Our job is to follow the facts and the law, and that is what we do.
Anybody tell Bill Barr that? Because I thought mostly he was spinning the Mueller report and doing lots of redactions.
Well, you can understand why the Republicans would think in such a manner, considering how Bill Barr served Donald Trump.
And yeah, Jeff Sessions.
Yeah, you're right, man. And the other, you know, the bald guy. I don't even know who else came in and out of that position. But, you know, that's how Trump
Acting
did it.
Isn't Attorney General, it? Wasn't it Matt Clark there for a minute, Tom?
Jeff Clark?
Jeff.
Or like a...
No, not Jeffrey Clark. Tried. No.
That's He tried.
He was willing to step into the breach, Dom.
Yes.
And serve the nation through corruption of the electoral process and the peaceful transfer.
And screw the nation. Yes, that's exactly what he wanted to do.
You say potato, I say potato.
AG Garland, last cut on the Hill today. Cut eight, please.
Our job is not to take orders from the president, from Congress, or from anyone else about who or what to criminally investigate.
Boom.
Here's another headline, Dom. This one from the Raw Story, one of my favorite sources. Badgering the witness. Chaos erupts as Matt Gaetz tries to steamroll Merrick Garland on the January 6th. David Edwards reporting, Rep. Matt Gaetz was accused of badgering U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland on Wednesday after he refused to allow answers to his questions. In a House Judiciary Committee hearing, Gaetz peppered Garland with questions about Biden family ties to China. But when Garland tried to answer, Gates interrupted and asked about January 6th. Yeah. So did the FBI lose count of the number of paid informants on January 6th? Gates wondered. Let me answer your question about China, Garland replied. I want you to answer this question, Gates demanded. I only get 5 minutes. You've already sort of, I think, screwed the pooch on China. So January 6th, did you lose count of the number of federal assets? Gentlemen, as time has expired, Rep. Jerry Nadler pointed out. So he's trying to jam a couple more in. You know how it is when you're up against the heartbreak, Dom. Chairman Jim Jordan gave Garland a chance to respond. China is the most aggressive, most dangerous adversary the United States faces. Is he aware of this Republican Party? But I read on. And we are doing everything within our power to rebut that, to stop that, to prevent their invasions, both kinetic, both through cyberspace, the Attorney General stated. And we will continue to do that. If someone gave that answer in your courtroom, when you were a judge, you would tell them they're being non-responsive and you would direct them to answer the question, Gates bellowed. At that point, members of the committee erupted, pointing out that Gates had no more time. One member accused Gates of badgering the witness. They say that like being a badger is a bad thing. Before his time expired, the attorney general did not respond to the gentleman's question, Jordan said. I was hoping he would respond to the question about the confidential human sources on January 6th. He didn't respond to that. I'm sure we're going to get an answer to that later.
Sure. Yeah. Digging into it, flipping over all the stones, finding the facts.
Maybe if they just asked three times, Tom.
Yes.
Who are the confidential informants? Who are the confidential informants? Who are the confidential informants?
There's Dr. Evil's secret lair.
Would it be appropriate for the attorney general to disclose who the confidential informants to the January 6th were? I mean, Gates is a lawyer. No. I'm not sure what Jim Jordan is. Perhaps did he go to law school? He might have. Never met a sport Cody like, though.
So January 6th, did you lose count of the number of federal assets? I mean, okay, that's the question, and Garland did not answer it.
Well, the implication is there was federal assets in the crowd, right?
Yes.
Planted federals. This is the deep state theory that it was a federal action, that this is a setup. It wasn't really the Trumpsters. Why, it was paid FBI informants. You know, all this violence. Do you know that this is a conspiracy theory that's been...
No, I understand that part of it, but if that's where you're going down, this question maybe doesn't get there. Did you lose count of the number of federal assets? No. Next question. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know, man. These Republicans, it's a little out of hand. It's a little embarrassing. But, Crudy, you mentioned it. Let's throw it out there, man. Jim Jordan not wearing the jacket. You seem very bothered by that. Now, as a guy who went to a private Catholic high school, I got to tell you, I'm not a real fan of the uniform, man, of the dress code, as it were. And you got a problem with the jacket. You got a problem with Fetterman wearing a hoodie. A
little bit.
Why?
On the floor of the House, on the floor of the Senate,
Why? Why?
Because, you know, it's a dress code. It's a distinguished body. It's supposed to be our best advice.
Wait, hang on. We just played some sound. Right?
Is Fetterman supposed to show up in some Daisy Dukes and a tank top?
Republicans, are they distinguished to you, Crudy? Is that just these? Jim Jordan, right? Matt Gaetz wears a jacket. How about that?
I respect the chamber, if not those serving on the Republican side of the chamber.
And what is it about wearing a suit coat makes you respect a chamber, a room? Which is weird. How do you respect but whatever. What is wearing a suit coat? How does that make your respect shown?
Jim Jordan just has a habit of being sort of a tool of his party, a tool. Any means justify the ends. Obviously, he helped to hide the sexual assaults when he was a coach at Ohio State University.
And what does that have to do with his jacket?
I don't know why the hell you're asking me why it's a big
because
deal.
Because you're the one making an
And when I try to make a point, you do a Jim Jordan to me and interrupt my freaking train of thought. Man,
please continue. I'm sure you're going to come to some conclusion where any of those things have anything to do with what the guy wears.
Okay. He's a schmuck like you're being right now with or without a sport coat.
You're going to go somewhere, man. Please continue.
were going to break at this time. I had a thought. You interrupted the thought.
It matters.
Why does it matter to you to harangue me about this point?
Well, you keep bringing up dress codes, man. You seem to have a problem with it. I'm trying to get to the bottom of it.
Says the man who wears flip-flops to church if he went to church. Well, I mean, just because you don't honor...
Okay, so so you got a problem with me wearing flip-flops, Crudy?
Occasionally.
I'm not a respectable guy. I don't respect, you know, democracy because I wear flip-flops?
There are times where dress codes are appropriate.
When? Why?
Because decorum, fella.
Yeah.
You've never been to a place. Have you ever been to a guy's wedding? Do you show up in cutoffs and flip-flops or maybe put on a sport coat? Could you make
Depends
the effort? The guy's
a
committee chairman grilling the Attorney General of the United States. He can't even put on his sport coat, as is the custom and the dress code in the House.
I really miss the white wigs. Folks, we're the Devil's Advocates, 844-967-2789. Come back. We'll light Crudy's ass up a little bit more.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show, our last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now, 844-967-2789. Crudy, let me throw this out there, this whole dress code thing. The Hill reporting, a Democratic senator on the new dress code, he doesn't like it. Senator Mark Kelly, he agrees with you, Crudy. He's joined some of his congressional colleagues in criticizing the Senate's new informal dress code. I don't like it, Kelly said when asked by CNN anchor Jake Tapper about the updated dress code. I think it would have been better if we had a discussion about it ahead of time. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announced over the weekend that the Senate will ease up on the chamber's informal dress code, permitting senators to wear whatever they want on the floor. This means lawmakers will no longer have to poke only their head in or arm in the chamber to vote if wearing shorts or gym clothes. The change was met with some criticism from both sides of the aisle, with some pointing the finger at Senator John Fetterman, who is often spotted on Capitol Hill wearing shorts and hoodies instead of suits. Fetterman denied he was a driving force behind the change in the rules. Speaking to Kelly, Tapper appeared to mock the changes, asking the lawmaker, quote, "I wonder what you thought of Schumer changing the Senate dress code. It will accommodate what can perhaps best be called the broski takes on garbage to the curb on Sundays, outfits that Senator Fetterman and my beloved Commonwealth Pennsylvania favors." A group of 46 Senate Republicans sent a letter to Schumer Tuesday asking him to reverse the decision, arguing the Senate floor is a place of honor and tradition. Kelly is not the only Dem who has pushed back against the change. Manchin also had an issue with it. So, okay, so you're not, I mean, Jim Jordan not wearing the suit coat and Fetterman with the hoodies and all that.
I have much greater issues with Jim Jordan than his wardrobe. The fact that I used to that because I can't lay out the rape allegations that he covered up at Ohio State University, the athletes that he begged not to go public with this information and then denied any prior knowledge. Unfortunately, that's cumbersome to attack him with each and every time I reference Jim Jordan. So I occasionally reference the sport coat, but please do go on.
So you take issue with it. I mean, so what about Marjorie Taylor Greene?
I take issue with a lot of things that Jim Jordan has done.
Okay. Well, we're not talking about Jim Jordan. We're talking about dress codes. And you reference to him because you probably criticize him. It's easy to criticize a guy not wearing a jacket in your opinion. And my point is that doesn't matter. None of it matters, Crudy. I mean, do you have a problem with the women stop wearing dresses and the pantyhose and sleeveless shirts? Is that a problem too?
How about put on a freaking sport coat when it's appropriate to wear a sport coat? When people set a dress code, I get it, man. You got long hair and you wear black t-shirts all the time and flip-flops. You don't honor dress codes. You're outside of dress codes.
How do you honor a dress code, man?
You wear the clothes appropriate for the setting you're in, like a formal setting. Let's say a workplace like the U.S. Senate. You don't wear a freaking hoodie and shorts.
Why? Because Crudy says so. You know, back in the day, Crudy, not so long ago, women couldn't show their arms there. You got a problem with that,
too?
Yeah,
and once upon a time, women couldn't vote either, right, Don, okay, but that's so, not so what we're talking about.
Dress code. It's exactly what we're talking about. It was not very long ago that women had to cover their shoulders in Congress, Crudy.
It was not so long ago.
I want to know, is that too much for you? Was that a bit too far? Oh, my God. Next thing you know, they're going to show their calves. Next thing you know, they're going to be wearing, you know, you'll be able to see their shoulders. Goodness gracious. How can we get anything done in the what, oh so proper and formal Congress? that has like a 12% approval rating? You got to be kidding me, man. 844-967-2789. William, you're up from Berlin.
Hello.
Berlin. Welcome, William. What do you got for us?
Yes. I hate to hear you guys argue. My opinion is I agree 100% with Dominic because I hear the word decorum coming up a lot, and I'm looking at the definition, and it says behavior in keeping with good taste and propriety. And the Republicans do not have any decent behavior, so they do not follow decorum. That's about it for me. I'll just hang up and listen.
All right. Thanks for the call, William. 844-967-2789.
For the record, I was attacking both the decorum and the dress code of GOP.
of Jim Jordan. Of GYM
Judiciary
Jordan.
Leader Jim Jordan. Yes.
Zelensky, you know, coming. He's not, you know, he came to greet the president and whatnot, you know, wearing his, you know, war garb for crying out loud, you know, leading the country against Russian invasion and war. Also, not decorum, right? I mean, do you object to that? I'm just wondering, man, you seem to, if you're such a traditionalist, I'm just wondering at what point did it become, this is now what we should have, and that's only what we should have. I mean, things continue to change, man. It doesn't
Nat
matter.
From Hood River, Oregon, how you doing?
It's not about, hang on, come on, man. It's not about the clothes a person wears. It's about the content of the character, man. I mean, Jesus wore sandals, Kuchka reminded me. All right, Nate, your turn. Welcome. What do you got? Nat, your turn. Welcome.
You nailed it with the wigs, man. I mean, you know, things change. No one ever says, I should have done that anymore. They all say, I should have did that. Because every language that's in use changes, and this whole thing about we got to stick to the wigs. You know, society is getting a little more casual, and if you're like where I live out in the West Woods, if someone shows up in a suit and tie, you're either going to have to pay a lot of money or you're in trouble. Something is up.
Nat, let me ask you, if you were dragged into court, would you put on a nice shirt, maybe a sport coat?
Sure, but not a sport coat. I don't even think I own one anymore. But I think...
Well, Dom couldn't lend Dom's you one either, probably, one. Nat.
Yeah. But it's just, you know, why do they have 11 guys in a platoon? Because 10 soldiers and one guy to hold the horses. You know? It's there's certain traditions that I know they're hard to let go of, but I think Crudy's going to have to let go of this one.
I got to let go of you for now, Nat. Thanks for calling, though. From Hood River, Oregon. Love our fans all over. Less so when they agree with them. 844-967-2789. Bill from Fond du Lac. How you doing, Bill?
Hey, Bill.
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, yeah, Bill. You. Do you own a sport coat, and would you wear it to church or maybe court?
I definitely would. I think Dom is completely wrong on this one. And Mike, I don't agree with you often, but this is about respect for the institution, no matter what your thoughts are. I mean, what's next? Feet up on the furniture? What are we doing? You know?
I mean, Bill, do you take your hat off in a restaurant?
Of course.
Bill, do you think it's okay for women to show their shoulders in Congress, or should we go back to covering the shoulders up?
It's about respect, Dom, and that's really what it comes down to. And it's obviously that you don't have that.
Oh,
well,
curious, though, I think he stuck it to you, Bill.
Nice way to not answer the question, Bill, because, of course, you just sound like a misogynist to think, oh, my God, women, they must wear skirts. They got to cover themselves up. It is about respect and not about how you dress. That is exactly the point, Bill. You can dress to the nines, man. Donald Trump's got some expensive-ass suits, man.
Really?
You think
they
that
look
guy
dumpy.
Respects anything? Well, they look kind of moo-moo on them, but, you know, you got to work with what you got. The tailor can only do so much. Thanks for the call, everyone.
Thank you for listening. Maggie Dawn, always impeccably dressed, is next. And then Empowered Caregivers.